Hamas warns Israel of consequences after Israeli troops and settlers attack Palestinians in a flashpoint neighborhood in the occupied Al-Quds. The U.S. says the risk of a Russian invasion of Ukraine is high enough to justify its Kiev embassy drawdown. Moscow says Washington's hysteria has reached its peak. And the British government's move to raise energy prices and taxes is causing public anger. This is World News, a live broadcast from Tehran with me, Behruz Najafi. Welcome. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has issued a stern warning after Israeli troops and settlers attacked people in a flashpoint neighborhood in the occupied East Al-Quds. Hamas has blasted the overnight attack on Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood as a flagrant violation. The resistance group says that Tel Aviv is playing with fire and will face consequences for such aggression. Hamas is calling on Palestinians across the entire occupied territory to mobilize in support of the people in Sheikh Jarrah. The neighborhood has been the scene of frequent clashes between Israeli forces and Palestinians. Dozens of families live in there, facing possible expulsion from their homes in favor of Israeli settlers. Afghanistan's central bank is harshly critical of the U.S. plan to seize half of the $7 billion in frozen Afghan funds it's holding. The bank says Afghanistan will never accept the seizure of its assets in the name of compensation or humanitarian assistance to others. The bank says this is injustice to the people of Afghanistan. The decision has sparked outrage in the country, which is reeling under immense food insecurity, poverty, and disease. Afghan people have been demonstrating their anger and speaking out against Washington's decision.
I don't think the U.S. has the right to use Afghanistan's money to compensate 9/11 victims. The U.S. had no reason when it attacked us, but a lot of people died in the past 20 years. So it is the U.S. that should compensate us, and they should not spend their money.
Joe Biden the other day decided that Afghanistan's frozen assets would be given to the 9/11 victims. Therefore, we are protesting today, and we are asking the international community, how can Biden decide on the assets of Afghan people to spend it for the 9/11 victims?
Washington says it will free up to half of the Afghan funds it holds to compensate the families of 9/11 attacks. The U.S. says it will put the rest in a fund managed by the United Nations for humanitarian assistance to Afghans. Washington froze the funds after the Taliban took over power, and this, coupled with U.S. sanctions and a drop in international relief aid, has sent the Afghan economy into a free fall, raising the risk of a humanitarian crisis. Washington threw the ball into Moscow's court, saying that a path to diplomacy over Ukraine is open, but also warning that a response will be tough if Russia moves to invade its western neighbor.
A diplomatic path to resolving this crisis, a crisis created by the unprovoked massing of Russian forces all around Ukraine, that diplomatic path remains open. The way for Moscow to show that it wants to pursue that path is simple. It should de-escalate rather than escalate. If Moscow chooses the path of aggression and further invades Ukraine, the response of the United States and our allies will be swift, it will be united, it will be severe.
Well, Blinken added that the risk of a Russian incursion is high enough to justify the evacuation of much of the U.S. embassy staff from Kiev. Moscow has denounced Washington's peak hysteria over Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin has told his French counterpart Emmanuel Macron that talks of invasion are, in his words, provocative speculation. Putin warned that this approach can lead to a conflict in Ukraine. He also separately told U.S. President Joe Biden that Washington has failed to give a substantial answer to Russia's security concerns. They include NATO's eastward expansion and its deployment of offensive forces to Ukraine. A political commentator John Bostwick says that Russia has stressed it is not planning on invading Ukraine. If the U.S. and the West are worried about an invasion, they should provide evidence for such a concern.
There's no justification for statements about an attack coming in 1 hour or 3 hours or tomorrow afternoon or anything like that. If this is what the United States and its NATO allies are trying to do, to incite fear in their own populations, then that's what they're achieving. But of that fear, nothing good can come. Russia has been making it very, very clear that they're not planning to invade. If the West is that worried about an invasion, then maybe they should prove the evidence that they're using to make those claims. The people of the region on both sides are all the victims of current pre-warfare psychological operations. But the far more damaging and unsettling operation is the one being conducted by the United States and its NATO allies, who are goading the war on, who are threatening a war at any moment, and yet saying that they will not intervene in any way. So these elements are definitely stoking the fires of war. And since war is the main business for most of the NATO countries, the military-industrial complex is the main business, then they're just stoking the fires of their own economy at the expense of the Russians and of the Ukrainian, ethnic Ukrainians and ethnic Russians in the country of Ukraine.
Hundreds of people in the British capital have taken to the streets to protest the skyrocketing cost of living. The government's recent decision to raise energy prices and taxes threatens to push millions of Britons to choose between heating and eating. Said Puriza has sent us a report from London.
Coming out in the cold to make sure everyone gets to keep their home warm in winter amid the soaring cost of living in Britain. The government here blames the skyrocketing cost of living on global energy price hikes. These protesters, however, say it's the big companies that have made windfall profits who should foot the bill, not them.
Shell made £14 billion of profit. £14 billion. And BP made £10 billion. Why not take some of that and use that to pay for it?
They need to subsidise those bills. Why not? They've already written off £9 billion on PPE. They've written off £4.9 billion on bad debt, bad COVID loans, bounce back loans. So subsidisers.
The country's energy regulator, Ofgem, has risen the price cap in place to protect the people by more than 50%. The government has introduced a loan scheme to help out, up to $270 per household. But experts say the underlying drivers remain.
There are already a lot of people struggling to keep their homes warm, particularly those who live in houses that are not properly insulated. And the recent price hikes are expected to push as many as a quarter of UK households into fuel poverty.
Rising bills will affect millions, but they'll bite the hardest for those with fewer choices. Add to that a tax rise set to kick in come April.
It doesn't have to be tax, tax, tax all the time. We need to have something to be given to us as well. It's like benefits are not there anymore for us. So you go to work and you're still ending up being in a situation that, oh, where should I go? I can't afford this, I can't afford that. And every year is situation just getting worse and worse.
Someone young and starting off, you know, ready to buy a house and earn a living, it does make me quite worried, especially living in London. Cost of living keeps on rising. Wage is not really reflected in that. So, I mean, I am quite worried about my future and the high cost of living.
Millions of British households will soon face energy bills of more than $2,000 a year. Whether that much can be managed depends on how much you earn and where you live. Saeed Purza, London.
Now, elsewhere in Europe, France's Yellow Vests led an anti-government freedom convoy to Paris, taking a page from the book of protesters in Canada. But Paris responded with an immediate crackdown, and it's not clear if the French Freedom Convoy is finished or if it's only just started. Rami Mazahiri has more.
Tens of thousands of people marched nationwide while an estimated 3,000 cars converged in Paris for a freedom convoy emulating the anti-government movement in Ottawa. The convoy was led by France's Yellow Vests, who resumed their Saturday marches in October and also included some of the long-running protesters against a vaccination smart pass so strict it's been called a de facto vaccine mandate. Equally important for protesters was expressing long-running disapproval of President Emmanuel Macron and his right-wing socioeconomic policies.
The price of gas is killing us. It's all become too much for us to accept. If we keep letting things go, where is France going to end up?
France responded by flooding Paris with over 7,000 police, who waged yet another violent crackdown on peaceful protests. Dozens were arrested, hundreds of fines were issued, tear gas was constant on the famed Champs-Élysées Avenue, and cars were impounded.
I came here from Bordeaux. The government responds with violence because they have nothing else to offer. And this is why the French do not understand them. I do not think the French are stupid. They want to understand. All we want is some answers to our many questions on policy.
In order to prevent the Freedom Convoy from implanting itself, the capital was locked down in many areas, something which Paris saw every Saturday for over 6 months in late 2018 and early 2019.
We marched as Yellow Vests for 2 years, and we are still Yellow Vests today. We all saw that nothing changed. The cost of living is too expensive. We can pay our bills at the end of the month. We don't want this government and the violence anymore.
The Freedom Convoy may have already wrested a concession. The government announced plans to abolish the pass at the end of March. Many called the timing curious, as that would be just before voters first go to the polls on April 10th. Protesters say they expect more attempts at an Ottawa-style freedom convoy, no matter how repressed by the government this one has been. It's possible the French election campaign of 2022 has just begun. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
A stand-up between the Canadian police and anti-vaccine ralliers continues in the capital, Ottawa. Authorities saying that those who do not respect the rule of law will get arrested. The warning comes hours after the start of an operation by the police to end the ralliers' blockade of the Ambassador Bridge, the country's busiest border crossing with the U.S. Truckers have cut access to three vital Canadian-U.S. crossings in protest at the government's COVID restrictions and vaccine mandates. The presence of the U.S. and Canada have called for an end to the blockade, and a judge has ruled accordingly. Canadian officials say the security officers have been deployed to some other areas, including Toronto and New Brunswick province, to avoid similar unrest. Now from Canada over to Sudan, where de facto ruler defends intelligence sharing with Israel, claiming that it has helped protect national and regional security. Army leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan says that the exchange of intelligence with Israel has enabled Sudan to dismantle suspected militant groups. Burhan insists it's legitimate for Sudanese security agencies to have ties with Israel. The top general seized power in a military coup d'etat last October that has sparked mass protests. More than 70 people died in a heavy-handed crackdown by the junta. Sudan normalized relations with Israel 2 years ago under a U.S. brokered deal. Since then, they've forced security and intelligence relations, and their officials have met in unannounced trips. When it comes to Yemen, Abu Dhabi, which is part of the Saudi-led coalition, is not holding back. While the Yemeni army has started a new retaliatory campaign against the UAE, the sheikdom has risen its purchase of military hardware. This report looks at Abu Dhabi's involvement in the Yemen war and whether the new Yemeni operations will force the sheikdom to change its course.
As the Saudi war in Yemen rages on, clashes and cross-border strikes have escalated in the past few weeks. The Yemeni army has conducted several strikes on targets deep inside the United Arab Emirates in response to what it calls the sheikdom's complicity in the crimes committed against the people of Yemen. Sana'a has promised to continue the cross-border strikes until the blockade on Yemen is lifted and the war on the country is ended. But how is the UAE involved in the war? The country has been supporting the so-called Southern Transitional Council separatists in southern Yemen since at least 2018. Those are the mercenaries that took control of Yemen's resource-rich Socotra Island in 2020. This move was a departure from its coalition partner, Saudi Arabia, who is only interested in keeping the Yemeni army away from its border. But the UAE has shown interest in controlling the port of Aden as well. Its focus is to have control over the important waterway, the Bab al-Mandab, an important oil shipping route.
Clearly, that's exactly the intention and the reason that Israel and is involved is partly because that also means that they have at least the approval, the tacit approval of the United States as well. So they think that the UAE thinks that this is the way that they will be able to control this sea route. They're also building a base on the island of Perim, or Mayum, as it's called, just off the coast of Taiz in Yemen. And it's actually, this is also Yemeni territory. But it's right in the middle of the Bab al-Mandab. It's right in the middle of the routes of 20,000 ships that pass through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal.
The Yemeni army has in recent weeks been fighting and liberating land from the separatists in the provinces of Shabwa and Marib. The UAE is Saudi Arabia's main partner in the years-long war that Riyadh and its allies have been waging against Yemen to change the impoverished country's ruling structure. The military campaign has killed hundreds of thousands of Yemenis and turned the entire Yemen into the scene of what the United Nations calls the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The onslaught enjoys American military, logistical, and political support.
Now, Abu Dhabi is scrambling to boost its air defenses following a string of Yemeni attacks on the UAE's vital infrastructure. It's following in the footsteps of Saudi Arabia and is turning to Western powers like the U.S. to supply it with military hardware and weaponry. But reports suggest that Riyadh is running critically low on ammunition to keep its missile systems operational. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
radio. Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, February 13th, 2022. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. If you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. And guess what? I think it's a good time to congratulate you on the World Radio Day. Yes, every year World Radio Day is celebrated on February 13th. The day was decided by UNESCO back in 2011 during its 36th conference. The theme of the 2022 edition of World Radio Day is devoted to radio and trust, because despite a global decline in trust in the internet and social media networks, radio continues to be seen by people as one of the most trustworthy news sources. Yes, we thought it's a good time to congratulate you on this great day. Radio has turned out to be one of the most resilient mediums in the world. Radio has not just survived the coming in of television, but also more technologically advanced audio devices. Radio continues to be seen by people as one of the most trustworthy news sources. So congratulations this great day, and happy this great day to all radio staff, including producers, announcers, journalists, reporters, news writers, as well as radio enthusiasts around the world. So here we are back, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us. And here, I do send my appreciations to those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, Arthur Fernandez from Spain, and Rob Boer from the Netherlands. And here, most appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails and letters from around the world, including Bathun Rudra from Bangladesh, who has sent us an email. Sutik Hati from India has sent us an email. We have another email from Bangladesh, and this time from Rafi MD Nazmustadat. And from Germany, we have an email from Kurt Ettlinger. And we have another email from India, and this email is from Hemant Kumar. So stay with us. Later during the program, I will read these great emails and letters from around the world. Welcome back. As I said, from Bangladesh, we have an email from Bathun Rudra. So let's see what he says. Hi, my radio friends. How are you? I am Bathun Rudra from Bangladesh. I wish you a happy World Radio Day 2022. I love and will love radio because it is my friend and is the best media all over the world. And I love all radio workers and radio listeners. Salam and warm greetings to you, Bathun Rudra from Bangladesh. And thank you very much for sending us this great message on World Radio Day 2022. Of course, we also congratulate you on this day because you are a radio enthusiast. And happy this great day, World Radio Day 2022, to all radio enthusiasts, especially the listeners of IRIB English Radio. Baton Rudra from Bangladesh, thank you very much for writing us this congratulatory message on World Radio Day. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. And Dr. Hemant Kumar from India, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. And this email, as I see it, is focused on World Radio Day 2020. So let's see what Dr. Hemant Kumar from India says. World Radio Day is an observance day held annually on February 13th. World Radio Day is about celebrating radio. That's why we love it and why we need it today more than ever. A day to remember the unique power of radio to touch lives and bring people together across every corner of the globe. I hope IRIB English Radio makes success. Thank you and good luck. Salam and warm greetings to you, Hemant Kumar from India. And I do send my appreciations to you for sending us such a lovely and great email to IRIB English Radio and the program Listeners Special. Yes, as you said, World Radio Day is celebrated every year on February 13th. World Radio Day is about celebrating radio, and that's why we love it and why we need it today more than ever. As the research shows, radio has become and has turned out to be one of the most resilient mediums and continues to be seen by many people around the world as one of the most trustworthy news sources in the time when we have fake news in the social media and through internet. Thank you very much for writing this email. It was as great as before, Dr. Hemant Kumar, as you gave us great informations this time about World Radio Day. Thank you. Write to us soon, Dr. Hemant Kumar from India. And we are waiting for more emails and for more information from you, Dr. Hemant Kumar from India. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. So, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Germany from Kurt Ettlinger. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. As I said, from Germany, we have an email from Kurt Ettlinger. Let's see what he says. Dear sir and madam of the team of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting, as a DXing fan, I scanned my radio dial on Saturday and I found your frequency. I found your programs very interesting and full of information, especially your broadcast lecture. In addition, I hope I would be able to find more secondary frequencies of your station. So I would be very grateful to you if you can send me QSL card for my reception report. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Kurt Ettlinger from Germany in the time of winter, in the cold times of winter. Thank you very much for sending us this email. And it seems that you've just already joined IRIB English Radio listeners, and it's great. We are glad to have you with us. So let this relationship and this mutual relationship continues. So you listen to IRIB English Radio and you write to us, tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs, and we are so happy that you found it interesting and full of information. Kurt Ettlinger from Germany, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, because sending paper QSL cards is not possible in the time of pandemic. Thank you again, Kurt from Germany. And from Bangladesh, we have another email from one of our regular listeners, from Rafi MD Nazmus Sadat. So let's see what Rafi says. Dear program organizer, happy World Radio Day 2022. We wish everyone a very special greeting on this very day. May radio will unite us all to build a peaceful world. Salam and warm greetings to you, Rafi MD Nazmus Sadat from Bangladesh. And I do send my gratitude to you for sending us this congratulatory message on the World Radio Day 2022. We also wish you the best, and thank you for everything. Why don't you tell us your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast? Yes, in your upcoming emails, tell us which program or programs you like the best. Thank you anyway. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. So after a short break, I will be back with an email from India, from Sutik Hathi. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. This email, which I'm reading right now, is from India. This is from Sutik Hathi. Sutik Hathi from India says, "Dear IRIB English Radio staff, Happy New Year to all of English service. I have been listening your broadcast since 2009. Your programs are very much informative. For long days, I have not got any letter from you. I hope that you will send me a calendar of 2022 along with your magazines. Salam and warm greetings to you, Sutik Hathi from India, and thank you very much for sending us this email. I think this email has been with delay because you've just congratulated the new year to the English service and of course our listeners around the world. Anyway, thank you for that. For your information, we Iranians celebrate the new year on Nowruz, which is the beginning of the spring, and we're just 1 month away to Nowruz and the beginning of spring in Iran. And also we celebrate our new year on the beginning of spring, and it's different with the new year, actually with Christian New Year, which is being celebrated around the world anyway. We also congratulate you on the new year, the Christian New Year 2022. And thank you very much for sending us this email. As for your request for sending you, you know, magazines and promotional items and souvenirs of IRIB English Radio, unfortunately, in the time of pandemic, we can't send you any material. And for the time being, before the coronavirus is eradicated, we will send you an EQSL card, an electronic QSL card, and please accept it from us. Anyway, Sutik Hathi from India, thank you very much for sending us this email. We are looking forward to hearing from you. And before we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, again, I congratulate you on the World Radio Day. I congratulate all radio enthusiasts and, of course, radio staff on this great day. Please keep in touch with your radio, IRIB English Radio, and have a very good time.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with RIB English Radio.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The crisis in Ukraine has been marked by the U.S. announcing that Russia will invade Ukraine any minute. It was even accompanied by the apocalyptic scenario where Russians' onslaught with tanks and fighter jets would cause civilian casualties. Meanwhile, as the U.S. President Joe Biden and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin have started their call to discuss the troop buildup around Ukraine, Ukraine itself is warning its Western allies not to hype the situation. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how much of the situation is actually hyped, and try to figure out, through our guests, what the respective parties, namely the U.S. and Russia, are after. Our guests joining us for this edition of The Spotlight, we have peace researcher and director of the Transnational.live, Jan Oberg, who joins us from London. Also activist and writer from the Answer Coalition, Gloria Lariva, joins us from San Francisco.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Jan Oberg, let me first start with you and try to get an idea and sense from you, if I was to give you some of the latest developments, whether you think that there's going to be an invasion or not. Now, there was this phone call or some kind of communication between the U.S. president and the Russian president, in which Biden, according to our sources, has said to Putin that if Russia invades Ukraine, there will be a decisive and swift response. You have a Russian submarine and cargo ship that has passed through the Danelis Strait en route to the Black Sea for military drills, the U.S. withdrawing nearly all of its remaining soldiers from Ukraine, Russia accusing a U.S. submarine of violating its waters off the Kuril Islands, and a number of countries saying, asking their citizens to leave Ukraine. So what do you think?
Well, first of all, I think there's far too much emphasis on military matters. Military matters, weapons, movements, troops, and all that, just symbols or symptoms of underlying conflicts that we have not addressed and that the media has not addressed.
I'll leave it down.
Secondly, I think the story of this is it would never have happened if NATO had done what it should have done in 89-90 when the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact disappeared, namely to close down itself. The only raison d'etre for NATO was that the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact was there. And we could have created what Gorbachev suggested, a kind of European conflict resolution mechanism, a European United Nations, what he called a secure European house together. Now, the other thing that I think is the main reason for this is that NATO country leaders, including senior Bush, James Baker, Major Margaret Thatcher, and God knows whom, everybody said to Gorbachev in 89-90, we will not expand NATO one inch, which was the main reason that Gorbachev accepted a reunited Germany in NATO. All these promises were broken by the Clinton administration. And now you have 10 countries, formerly Warsaw Pact, which are now NATO countries. Now, that encroachment, this containment, this going closer and closer and closer to Russia is something that no matter what you think of Russia or Putin or whatever, is unacceptable in a realpolitik sense with any country. You remember, or at least some of the listeners here remember, how the U.S. reacted in 62 when Russia tried to put up nuclear tactical missiles in Cuba. It's right. No, not that close to our territory. And the fantastic thing is now that Russia has not threatened. That's an interpretation in the Western world. It has moved its troops closer to the border because of exercises. And you have the president of Ukraine, Zelensky, saying, I'm sick and tired of these panicking reactions from the West because these exercises were the same we saw last year and last year and last
sure.
year.
Let's talk about some of the ways that some are saying that this has been hyped, including the Ukrainian president Zelensky in so many words. I mean, really, when you take a look at this, Gloria Riva, what the White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said, Russia could invade Ukraine any day, would overrun Kiev in 72 hours, up to 50,000 civilian casualties could result. And when you take a look at the way that that's been said, why do you think the U.S. is being so explicit, and graphic, and apocalyptic in nature in the way it's describing this?
It's really incredible what Jake Sullivan said yesterday. In fact, at one point I said, does he think he's Putin's spokesperson? Because he was seeming to say, no, Putin is not going to invade yet, not yet, as if he knew what Putin was going to do. In fact, it's the most elaborate set of lies and pretexts that the U.S. is creating, heading up NATO, in order to justify whatever action it will take, including bringing Ukraine into NATO, which would be a dagger at the heart of Russia and a grave, grave threat to the people of Russia and to world peace in general. The fact is that for several years now, even since the Clinton administration, the U.S. has wanted to bring Ukraine in after it added some 15-odd countries after the promise, as a gentleman just said, from Thatcher and the U.S. government that they would not move one inch eastward. And in fact, that's the reason why the Warsaw Pact existed. Once it was ended, no matter what promises the West made to Gorbachev, that in fact was just a ruse. Now I think that this extreme danger to war is not on Russia's part, but the floating of the U.S. of a false flag operation shows that this war of aggression that the U.S. wants is in order to say, we didn't start it, Russia did. When in fact the aggression is coming from the United States. And why all this accusation against Russia and this elaborate set of lies is because the U.S. must win world opinion, especially in the seat of the Western European countries, which are going along with the U.S., some more reluctantly, but the U.S. is pushing them together. And even Zelensky.
Which countries reluctantly? Which countries are you referring to when you say reluctantly?
Germany. Germany, partly because of Nord Stream arrangement, but because in actuality, it's history in what Nazi Germany did to Russia, to the Soviet Union, the loss of 27 million lives in the Soviet Union, and yet the crushing of Germany. Just think the image of German troops as part of NATO going into Russia. And that's why to the Russian people and the areas, too, that used to be the Soviet Union, like Belarus, for example, or Kazakhstan, the people understand what war meant. They understand that their generations before them died to defend the country.
Okay.
And so war is not a joke for them.
Right. Well, let's look at the way that this is being depicted, Jan Oberg, and the narrative that's being presented. In one respect, some are portraying the Russian President Vladimir Putin, that he's facing a stark choice. Russia can seize control over Ukraine or keep strong economic ties to Europe. I mean, this is one of the headlines, actually, from a very reputable publication, U.S. publication. And then it says it's going to be hard for Putin to do both. I mean, if we really take a look at what Putin would gain if and were he to invade Ukraine, the consequences and the negatives far outweigh the positives, doesn't it? In terms of trade, in terms of it not being able to trade with Europe, it not being able to sell its oil, and a whole host of other things. So why is this being portrayed, that Russia is going to go ahead with it in the U.S. eyes?
I'm afraid you are arguing far too much in logical realpolitik terms. This is not where the United States and NATO Secretary General are. They are living in a kind of bubble in their own world. They are not having any reality checks, and they think they can get away with telling the world anything and we will believe it. The sad thing is that this goes for most of the mainstream Western media too. The uniformity with which this has been presented, I'm following Danish and Swedish media, but I do also follow The Guardian or all the other important newspapers, they have the same story. There's nobody who says, hey, wait a minute, what is it? What is going on here? I mean, this kind of homogenized threat image, revealing the and all giving a boost to the panicking, to the ridiculous statements. I mean, you can say many things about Putin, but you cannot say that he's inexperienced or that he is stupid and or he's suicidal. And that must be what you assume when you make these assertions or insist that we know that in any minute he will invade Ukraine. There is no reason to believe that. And the fabulous thing is that Russia has its troops on its own territory, whereas the United States has its troops all over the world,
sure,
including in Europe, with thousands of troops. The last madness is permanent stationing of heavy material and soldiers in Denmark. Denmark is... 2 days ago, broke with 70 years of traditional no foreign troops on our territory and no pre-positioning of weapons.
Sure.
And that also means nuclear weapons can get in, because nobody will ask the U.S. whether they have nuclear weapons on its naval presence, because it will not be stationed permanently on the territory, but it would be on, let's say, vessels that get into Danish harbors.
Mm-hmm.
And they just made a base agreement with Norway. It's covering the whole way in Europe in a containment theory.
Sure.
That is what I'm really looking for, is how is the United States and NATO getting out of this when that invasion does not come?
Really? Well, you mentioned Denmark here, and Gloria Riva, I'd like to ask you about, European countries. Denmark is going to experience a 200% rise in energy prices. Now, we're looking at Europe and the situation that they have with energy, which they're in a, you know, it's in a crunch. It needs the Russian gas and oil badly, and, of course, Russia makes money out of that, actually makes up 40% of the continent's supplies. In Germany, it's like, I think, about 55%, and with Russian oil, 25%. European countries like Germany don't like what's happening, from what it appears. You tell us, Golia Lariva. Do you think they're doing enough, or are they being, what are they being told by the U.S.? I'm wondering if they want to diverge from this so-called scenario that the U.S. is painting.
Well, I think that despite the reluctance of some leaders, that they are falling in line. And as evidenced by Germany now acquiescing, saying, yes, we will go along with NATO. But I think Mr. Olberg, I think that was his name. Excuse my, I didn't hear your name right.
Yes, it is.
But I think, yes, I think his mentioning of the media is very important, because for the U.S. to carry out a war, it must have consensus of the population, or at least confusion. I think the American people are very angry about what happened with Afghanistan, of so many soldiers dying, of course, the destruction in Afghanistan, the cost of $2.3 trillion. How do you justify a new war adventure? Or great, great military jingoism in against Russia. You use media. So, for example, this morning in the New York Times, you show the whole map of the region, and there's not one sign of a U.S. troop or the militarization by NATO in total in Romania, Poland, the Baltic states, the agreement of Denmark, and, of course, within Ukraine itself. The only military presence shown is that of Russia and Belarus. And this is designed to create that popular opinion. But I think that the U.S. cannot go on and on and on with its military aggression unchallenged within the United States. And I would say this, that in the short term, what the U.S. may be trying to get from this is a way to weaken the Chinese-Russian unity. They signed in a very important document in Beijing, mm-hmm. during the Olympics, in which they declared that the adherence of the world must be to the United Nations. Why? For one thing, the Security Council, five permanent members, include Russia and China.
Sure.
And so they can have very well veto power against U.S. aggression. And that's why the U.S. is not going to the U.N. in this instance, like uh-huh. it did in Yugoslavia. They just used NATO. So, that's why NATO is such a dangerous entity and must be abolished.
Okay, well, I'm so glad that you mentioned that. I mean, here is another case, Jan Oberg, that I believe the U.S. has shot itself in the foot. You can tell us at this joint Russia-China statement, which both leaders came out saying a new era in the global order is now created, unveiling a sweeping long-term agreement between the two, challenging the U.S. as a global power, NATO as a cornerstone of international security, and liberal democracy as a model for the world. Isn't that the last thing that the U.S. wanted, is to have China and Russia enhance their ties to this degree, which we're going to get into some of the other things that they have said?
I think if you look at the larger world perspective, what is happening these years is that the West is losing, declining, and will fall as the world's leader. And that we will have a multipolar world in the future. We will have cooperation instead of confrontation. And China has, no matter what China does, you can see there's only negative reports in the Western press. This is guided by millions of dollars and laws in the United States, where also state-financed U.S. media are telling us all kinds of stories about Xinjiang, about dictatorship, about, I don't have to make the list, you know the list yourself.
Sure.
Now, that is a big Cold War, and that is a Cold War. It's well organized, it's orchestrated. My foundation has published a report of this, 120 pages. And secondly, there is the old Cold War, which is within the West, the Eastern West and the Western West. Now, the strongest power the United States still has is not economic, not cultural, not social, not diplomatic, not international law, because it doesn't obey that. It runs something that's called the rules-based international order instead of, you know, the international order and the UN Charter. They've dropped that long ago. Now, the strongest thing they have left is the military, and that's what they use. And therefore, there's no doubt in my mind that what the U.S. does at the moment in a relationship to a lot of countries, including Iran, is self-defeating in the long run. This is a Titanic on its way down. And unless you find out that you are on your way down and look around for somebody who can help you and work with you and be friendly with you and cooperate with you, which I've always argued mm-hmm. that we should, the West and with the U.S. in Europe, if you do not accept that there is something happening in the world which you cannot fight militarily, but sure. would have to cooperate, create confidence, economic cooperation, what have you, the Americans and the American state and the empire will lose.
Well,
and I think it's part of the desperation of that. And I said to you before, I think you're looking too rational. It's not rational anymore. Irrational. It's an irrational policy to start a new Cold War or continue a new Cold War with these ways in around the Ukraine crisis.
Well, sure.
And is a consequence of a triumphalistic interpretation of the end of the first Cold War. It, mind you, NATO set up its first office in Kyiv, Ukraine, in 1994. Mind you, that the U.S. financed and were behind, diplomatically and otherwise, in the regime change also in Kyiv in 2014, Indeed. After which Putin annexed Crimea and we had the problem. It did not start with Mr. Putin or Russia.
Right.
And so this is what makes the whole thing dangerous as one party. I'm not saying everybody else is not guilty. I'm saying the main party, which has 12 times more military than Russia, are playing these games also with the media. And what we desperately need now are media and Western politicians who can say, please, dear America, do not continue down that road because right. you are dragging us into the ocean with your Titanic philosophy.
This thing that you mentioned, Gloria Larriva, about the UN, I'd like to expand on it a little bit more because as we see Moscow and Beijing, how they are on one team when it comes to certain issues and voting in terms of the veto that they have on any resolution, they're going to go against the U.S. They already said, declared their opposition to the further enlargement of NATO and to the formation of other regional security alliances. But what I'm wondering is, once this situation dies down, and if there is no Russian invasion, do you think that the U.S. is going to suffer losing some of its allies in Europe, whom will then gravitate towards perhaps Russia than China more because of the fallout from Ukraine? I mean, has the U.S. Calculated all these risks and the fallout from it, from what it's doing?
Well, I believe that in peacetime, some of the Western powers would be interested in having such an economic arrangement with China and Russia, with the proximity, the access to fuel. But in wartime, which is what the U.S. is heating up, they will be forced to fall in line. And the Belt and Road Initiative of China, I don't think that Russia and China are threats to the United States. They are not threats. And I reject the idea of the word invasion by Russia. It's been touted 1,000 times in the media, but I absolutely reject that. And the idea of a false flag accusation against Russia is precisely designed after the massive militarization by the U.S. in the countries bordering or close to Russia, is then to say, well, that trigger was by Russia, when in fact the trigger is the U.S. armamentation and the growth of NATO in all these years since the demise of the Soviet Union. And on the other hand, the American people are also paying a price. They may not be quite aware of the connection between the lack of housing and jobs in the United States, but $1 trillion for military spending every year, at least of what we know, 800 bases around the world, and the disaster of Afghanistan against the poor Afghani people who've suffered, means that, again, the lies must be perpetrated by the media. On the other hand, last week, there were 55 demonstrations across the United States saying no war with Russia and no war on Russia, as well as a demand to abolish NATO. There's no reason for NATO. Mm-hmm. The United Nations